Hello, and welcome to Monumental, where we sit down with entrepreneurs, leaders, visionaries, and big thinkers making monumental change. Here's your host, Evan Holliday.
Welcome to Monumental. I'm your host, Evan Holliday, and today on the show with us, we have Holly Williams. Holly, so great to have you on the show. How are you doing?
So great to be here.
Yes, I love it. So a little background, Holly and I have both been running in the same circles with Joe and Joe Fairless and Trevor McGregor. And it was awesome to be able to hang out with Holly quite a bit at this past Best Ever Conference out in Keystone, Colorado. And so I knew, I was like, we got to get Holly on the show. So I'm really excited to make this happen. So a little background on Holly. She's the founder of KeepMore.com. She's been a real estate investor for the past 20 years with properties investments all over the Southeast and in New York. So with that, Holly, let's dive right in and go into a little bit of your background and how you got to where you are today.
Let's do it. So do you want to know how I got to where I am today?
Yes.
Keep plugging along. Don't die. Get up in the morning.
And easy enough.
Do the best you can do. That's exactly right. And I guess, you know, what I grew up in Houston, in Texas, and went to Texas Tech, guns up. And I've been investing in real estate for 20 years, so I'm a little older than you probably. But what happened was that I read Rich Dad Poor Dad and all of that and I knew about real estate investing, but it's a lot of work. And I had a career in advertising, and I was doing everything that you're supposed to do. You put money in the 401k, and you work hard and move up the corporate ladder, and all of those things that we're taught to do. And all of that led me to New York in the early 90s. And I ended up getting a couple of single family homes, bought a Manhattan apartment, but always knew about real estate investing, but didn't know that you could do it passively, and didn't really understand the difference between debt investing and equity investing, and didn't really understand that the very, very wealthy have access to a whole bunch of things that just the merely successful people just don't know about because we didn't grow up knowing about it. So all of this kind of came together, and I was given an opportunity, because that's what it is. You really have to know somebody unless you've got a $30 million net worth, in a private wealth management account at Goldman Sachs, you really have to know somebody that's an entrepreneur that is doing syndication, multifamily syndication. So I happened to know Joe Fairless, and he was just getting started, and I really invested just to help him because I didn't really, I thought it was too good to be true and all this, so I trusted him, and one thing led to another. And so then he asked me to help him in the next deal. I was one of his first investors, and then he asked me to help him put the next one together, and then put the next one together. So it's one thing just sort of led to another, and over the years I became more passionate about this than advertising, so I do this now.
That's awesome. I love it. So how did you get connected with Joe originally?
Well, so we both went to school at Texas Tech.
Yeah.
So he's quite a bit younger than I am, although he's old enough to, drink legally and everything. Yeah, he's old enough, but I'm older. And so we were both on the same board. There's an advisory board for the School of Communications or Advertising or whatever their media and communicate media, whatever they're calling it now. And so that's where met him, and he was in advertising and I was in advertising, and we were both in New York and both interested in real estate. But I knew him for probably 4, 5, 6, 7 years before he called me one day and said he was leaving his job to go buy apartment complexes.
You had read Rich Dad Poor Dad at that point, right?
Oh yeah. And I knew it, you know, opened my eyes to a lot of things. But you know, my thought back then was, why is this guy writing books? If it's such a great thing, he's really just selling books. You know, it's just, we have this map of the world, and my book's going to be out next month, God willing.
Yeah. Go Holly.
You know, it's really about opening eyes and really, you know, we have a hard time, especially with the media now, you know, what's true, what's not true. And the truth is really somewhere in between. And you really have to look at a lot of different things. And yeah, Robert Kiyosaki sells a lot of books. That's, you know, but he's also right.
Yeah. There's partially a reason why it's not just marketing. It's
been so amazing true value about this whole adventure in multifamily syndication for me is, number one, I was able to retire on passive income from just limited partner investing, which is amazing, by moving money out of the stock market. But the biggest thing is that I've been able to share that. And you know, there's a couple people in our little circle that have done the same thing. You know, they started investing with me and just like I started investing with Jay. So it's just been able to really change lives and perspectives. And it's so relevant right now with the stock market doing what it's doing. And,
yeah.
You know, the way we are trained and programmed to readily give our life savings over to a financial advisor that readily tells us that they don't know what's going to happen, you know, and that, we talk about mitigating risks, and you can't mitigate risks unless you really know what they are. And all I can tell you is I've made money in Apple stock, but I like the iPhone, right? I'm talking on one, whatever, but I can't tell you about their business like I can the business that we're in with, like I can with every one of our apartment complexes.
Yeah. And what outside of reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, what was it that got you to keep growing that business and keep diving further into it and eventually going full time into it and leaving advertising?
First thing that happened was that I watched my parents pass away in 2010 and 2011. And my father had taken the golden parachute. And I remember them saying, yeah, we're going to take the lump sum because, you know, you and your brother will be able to leave you, you know, some of it and all this stuff, as opposed to like a pension that won't be anything left, right? Well, we're taught that, right? We're taught in our heads, if the stock market returns 10% a year average, so in our heads, you think, oh, if I save up $1 million, then I'll get 10 grand a year, $100 grand a year income. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's what's in our heads, that in our little map of the world that we're given, right? But that's not what really happens. What really happens is the stock market goes up and down and up and down. And if you need that money to live on, you have to take it out when it's down.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what happened to my parents. So I watched them, you know, barely terrified that they were going to, it was just heartbreaking. So that's the first thing. Yeah. Second thing, I realized that this was all really fiction. It's a real myth. We're told a lot of myths about investing, and it's ingrained in our society. And I began to really internalize that there were just some myths that just really needed to be debunked. Second thing that happened was that I had, you know, I'm very grateful. I've had a nice career making money, all this stuff, but I was paying 50% of everything that I earned in taxes and not getting a lot for it. Frankly, they're not very good stewards of our money, the government. And so I got a $65,000 1099. And my financial advisor had me in all these mutual funds, and which I know now are very expensive. And I know a lot of things, right, that you'll have to read the book to see. But, you know, I got this 1099, and you know how we get them, and they say you've made $5,000 or you've made $10,000 from the banks and everything all through our careers. And you know, I used to just go, wow, look at this, I made $10,000 a year, and not paying attention. Well, I got one that said you made $65,000. Well, surprise, you owe 25 grand in capital gains. And I said, well, I didn't take any money out. And that's when it began to be real money.
Yeah.
And it began to dawn on me, oh my God, this is really costing me money. And of course, everybody tells you when you say this, they go, well, that's because you're making money, so that's a good thing. It's really not when you start doing that. And then the third thing happened when a friend asked me to invest in a real estate syndication, and I didn't know what that was, but I did.
So how, and I love that you brought up, like, you know, you need to be basically asking a whole lot more questions and questioning everything. Because it sounds like that's part of your journey and how you got to the conclusion you got to of, like, you know, you're like, wait a second, why am I paying for something I didn't even actually realize.
Right.
And why am I paying 50% of every paycheck to the government? Why can I not enjoy the income that I work so hard to make?
What are they doing for us?
Yeah. Yeah. No,
am I sending my daughter to private school because the schools are terrible where I am, right? In New York City.
Yeah.
Now, why?
So, As far as multifamily investing, getting started with was that first multifamily deal with Joe? That was your first multifamily investment?
Yes, and I'd never heard of it. And I know people that I worked at AOL in the early days. I know people that my net worth is a square root of theirs, and they think this is a scam and too good to be true. I thought I was the only one that didn't know that you could do this. And what I know now is that it's what the 0.5% or 1%, you know, have been doing years and years and years and years and years. If you go to any garden style apartment complex in America, 99% of the time, you go in there and you ask the people that work there, hey, who owns this? They'll tell you the name of the management company. And who owns this is A-Rod and Warren Buffett's companies and all the hedge funds
Blackstone, Brookfield
have an opportunity to invest in them.
Yeah.
These things that are like a $250,000, $300,000 minimum, you know, $20 million net worth requirement. This is the family offices, the endowments. That's who owns these garden style apartment complexes. And that's who, for the most part, we're buying them from, very wealthy families and large funds.
Yeah, I think you've hit it right on. Like, you see a trend with time and time again of who is owning real estate, who is benefiting from real estate, and what is becoming of either that family or their legacy wealth or even their impact. And you look time and time again, those that are typically either making a big impact to the world or generating massive wealth have some relationship to real estate, right? Like, in some form or fashion, they are invested in real estate or own real estate through their business, through personal investments, whatever it is, like they are playing a role in owning real estate. And so I'm glad you hit on that, because that's spot on with, you know, that's what we're trying to do here at Monumental, is like, hey, how can we all get into this real estate venture where we can benefit from passive income, losses, appreciation, depreciation, like all these benefits from real estate, and having it backed up by a hard asset, especially now, especially in a crisis where, you know, equities in the stock market are going haywire. It's just, that's what we're trying to do here at Monumental, is give people that option, give them the education they need to get there. And then that way they can live their best life and make a massive impact in the world.
Well, so many people think about real estate in terms of appreciation. And especially here in the Northeast, we don't understand in the Northeast cash flow because you can't really do it. You never really have
crazy inflated prices.
Correct. And so what we do in Dallas, what we do in the Carolinas is really impossible to do where I live in New York City. And so the people in my bubble up here they think that there's no way that can happen because they don't understand. Even my husband, I married a New Yorker and took him down to see one of our apartment complexes. We were on a family vacation and I said, if you've ever heard me on a podcast, I'm married to a great guy. He's wonderful. He wants nothing to do with this. He's like, go ahead. I don't understand it. Just don't get us arrested. And so I took him down there and he's like, oh my God, this looks like a timeshare. This is, he's like, I thought you were buying high rise buildings. You would have had to have been there and know him, but it's pretty funny.
That's awesome. So
it's out of the realm of what a lot of people really understand or think about.
Yeah.
It really is. And, there's a couple of things though that you hit on the whole generational wealth thing. And there are a couple of really laws of the universe. And one of the laws of the universe that I've come to truly believe is that, since the beginning of time, land ownership was the measure of wealth. All the nobles.
Yeah.
All measured in terms of how much land you own, where landlord came from, right? So so real estate is the universal measure of wealth around the world and has been since the beginning of commerce. Second thing is that the universe expands and grows. See, so we're brought up, or at least me. I was brought up in, you remember the bell curve, the grading of the curve. Only certain people could make an A. It's like you had to have like certain numbers of people making an A and certain numbers of people. So if you made an A, that means that my chances of making an A were less because you made an A. And it's just like we're brought up into this whole scarcity mentality. So like if you get something, I don't, that makes less for me. And it's false because the universe expands and grows. I cut down a tree, nature grows another tree. It's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I go home to my hometown in Houston and it used to be one loop around the town and now there's two and I don't even know what the roads are. And where there were cows, there are now homes and businesses. So if you look at the universe, it's a law. It happens.
Yeah.
It happens. And so for me to really feel comfortable investing outside of what I was hardwired to invest in, which is the stock, all the things that we're bombarded with ads about and we're bombarded. I went to business school. I learned nothing about real estate syndication. I only learned about the stock market and I thought I understood it. And I could tell you about P/E ratios and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, when I really internalized it and started thinking about everything that we've been brought up with logically thinking about it, there's no way the numbers don't make sense. They don't make sense. The 401k thing, it doesn't make sense. It's not going to get us through our golden years. It's not. And our expenses are not going to go down when we retire. They're not.
Yeah.
Unless you want to downsize and live in a little apartment or something and never go anywhere. You'll need less income. But for the most part, I don't know about you, but I had 2 weeks of vacation a year and I'm ready to travel and go.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I mean, my expenses are not going to go down and that's as long as my health,
stays constant.
You know, and that's the best thing. That's the thing we're mostly worried about, right? So the wealthy live and think differently about money than we do. That's what my book is called Hidden Investing, What the Wealthiest 1% Know That We Don't.
That's awesome.
It's really about debunking a lot of these myths and how I grew up differently. And you know, when I was first starting my career, I filled out the 1040 easy and didn't really need to know a lot of this stuff. And then we get more and more successful, more and more successful. And now frankly, the government's depending on us to finance everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And so there's just many myths. And so I can tell you that I experienced this firsthand with multifamily syndication, that you can make income and defer it with depreciate all the benefits that the government gives us for investing in real estate, but you don't have to worry about the plumber and worry about property management or finding the deal or, you know, all of that. You don't have to worry about any of that. And so that's what I spend my days doing is evangelizing that and offering people that I love to, you know, admission to the club.
Yeah. That's a great, great mission to get behind. And I love you sharing the book. So Hidden Investing, is coming out soon. When is it coming out?
Thank God willing, in about a month. We're down to editing I sent them the last chapter the other day, and we're going through edits, and we've got the website that I've got somebody helping me, people helping me. It takes a village.
Yeah.
It takes a village.
That's really cool. I'm glad you're doing that and helping, you know, further share that message of like, hey, you know, there is a whole nother world of investing. There's a whole nother world of like where to put your money, how to best, you know, have your money grow itself, and help preserve your capital as well. 'Cause you're exactly right. Like, you know, I'm still learning so much, but I've learned a lot in that. You're exactly right. Like there's this whole book of almost like secrets, like you're saying, like hidden secrets that the average person never knows about, never learns about, nobody ever tells them. It's like you have to actively like seek it out in order to be able to understand that. You're exactly right. Like there's power in real estate. There's power in basically the connections you have within these networks, and it just so many different things. So I'm glad you're touching on that, Holly.
And, you know, one other thing I'll say about that too, is that, you know, who wouldn't agree that we should follow our laws? Would you agree that, I mean, if anybody doesn't agree that we should follow our laws, then drop me an email and we'll talk. But for the most part, I mean, I think that 100% or 99.9% of people would agree that it's our civic duty to follow the laws of our land, right? If you look at the tax code is written not to tell us how much tax we owe, because that would be easy. What it's written to do is it's about a gazillion, I don't know, I used to know the number of how many pages, but it's a big old thing.
Yeah.
It's written and it's chock full of things that we are supposed to do, that the government wants us to do and incentivizes us to do.
Yeah.
Because people smarter than me have figured all this out, I'm sure. And all of the things that the government wants us to do in the long run is going to stimulate the economy. So when people say things like, I mean, when people say that the rich don't pay taxes, that's not true. The rich are following the law. You see, people think that, you know, Jared Kushner doesn't pay taxes or whatever, or, you know, John Bon Jovi's got a beehive farm and he takes off all of his stuff is, you know, agriculture, whatever it is, right? They're following what's in our tax code.
Yeah, the government incentivized them to do that.
That's right. If you're not happy with that, then we need to change the laws. But actually, it's patriotic to follow the tax code.
Yeah.
We've just gotten a stimulus package from the government. You know, there are all kinds of things that we should really look at, right? And follow them, because that's what the government is asking us to do.
Yeah. And speaking of which, we touched on this briefly earlier. What are you doing, given the situation we're in with COVID-19 and uncertainty and kind of this crisis mode that we're all going through right now? How are you dealing with this so that you can come out of this on top and really grow from this?
So yeah, that's what's on everybody's mind right now. And you know, when I sit back and I think, you see, we're wired, right? We're wired. We have this wiring, hardwired. And when I think about, I get caught up in fear and anxiety, and oh my God, I've got to stop investing. Oh my God, I've got to hoard cash. Oh my God, all the stuff. But then when you really step out and start, you know, God gave us brains, right? And some more than others. And I've struggled with that, right? But with the little brain I have, I have thought about, you know, these universal laws that I talked about. And I think that it's going, first of all, it's going to be okay, right? And I think that we prudently need to not wait for things to happen, but figure out what we can control and what we can't control, right? So I can't control a whole lot of things, but what I can do is I can control my relationships, number one. So the first thing that we've done is started reaching out to our tenants, right? And so understand where they are in the cycle. I have one tenant, for instance, that works for Google, and her business, she's dying. She's got so much business, it's not even funny. And they're hiring people, and do I know anyone that can come work there?
Yeah.
We've got another one that's an architect, and she's in the middle of finishing a project. So 6 months from now, she's going to have a trouble if it doesn't come in. So I'm really working with our management companies and stuff to really understand where our tenants are. Those people that are, so that we get some sort of an early read on this. Those that are up for renewal, let's try to renew them based on their situation, right? So if we can renew them and keep their rent the same maybe for the next 6 months, or you know, there are all kinds of things based on whatever, you know, these are people, right?
Yeah.
People. And we want to work with our fellow people and make sure that everybody's okay. Which leads me to the second thing along with that, probably the most important thing is to make sure everybody's healthy. And if they need something, or we're not going to turn into a food bank, but we can certainly help. We want to make sure that the premises is safe, that we're stepping up our cleaning, that we're not spending money maybe we've pulled back on the business plan, at least for right now, till we figure out what the cash flow is going to look like.
Yeah.
Then we talk to our lenders. So we've also looked at every property and how much cash do we have? What can occupancy go to before we get in trouble? What things are necessary, what things are not, what expenses can we control, what expenses we can't control, all of those things. And so I think that once the fear dissipates, or at least, you know, a little, right, when you start figuring out things that you can do right now and today that will make a difference, and then other things I just can't control how fast this virus is moving, or who gets tested, or any of the stuff, or what Trump tweets, or I can't control any of that.
Exactly.
So the less I can think about that and think about what I can control, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're spot on that you can control your mindset. You can control the thoughts you have. You can at least be able to think about things in a positive light, and also think about, okay, well, like you said, I can control certain things about how we react on the property with our staff, with our residents, with our investors, with our lenders, like all the partners that you have on a deal. And not to mention, you can control how you're going to come out of this as far as the actions you're going to take, maybe things you learned, things you're going to be better prepared for coming out of this, you know, maybe preparing for any other certain unknowns or uncertainties in the future. I think there's a lot of room for growth on the personal and on the business side out of this.
You know, and before coronavirus, so I was living in Manhattan on 9/11, and I had just gotten married about 6 months prior to that. And, you know, I flew in that morning from San Diego from a business trip because I was all over the place. So I flew into Newark Airport and went to my Manhattan apartment that morning, and I was about to take a nap when the plane hit.
Wow.
And my husband called me, said there's a plane. So I remember that, and I was in the middle of all of that. And a lot of people that are, you know, so I'm 57, and a lot of people that probably, how old were you during 9/11?
I was in fifth grade.
All right.
So I was 11.
I can tell you that I've never been so terrified, and I don't think that anything can ever surpass that, because we were up on the roof of my building.
We're
like, holy moly, those are people jumping. I mean, we didn't know if another plane was coming. We didn't know if it was poisonous gas. We didn't know if any of, I mean, there was just, it was just sheer disbelief and terror. And so when this first started, when the stock market plunged, you know, the first day, when we really started seeing the impact of this in the U.S., I had a couple of partners call me, oh my God, what are we going to do? And I was like, you know, I don't see any people jumping off the building. You know, let's just be grateful for the little things. Let's think about what we got. And in many ways, this is much more traumatic for a wider number of people, I think, than this. But we're all in the same boat, right?
Yeah.
Grew out of 9/11, the world was different. But the world got huge, and the world came back, and the world, and we're better people for it. And I do know that. I know it. I've lived it. I experienced it. And
yeah.
So I know that this is going to end up the same way, no matter how. So that's what I think about. That is those kinds of things. So I think about, we don't know the whole reason why any of this stuff happens, but we're gonna see what we can learn from it, and we really are. It really is gonna be okay. It really, really is.
Yeah. And you know, you brought up a good point. Is, you know, there's always gonna be unknowns.
Yeah.
There's always going to have, you know, there's going to be something else in the future that we be like, oh my God, we never could have predicted this.
Right.
And it's going to happen multiple times, probably in your lifetime.
And, you know, it's reaching out to people and just saying, hey, are you okay?
Yeah.
I mean, one of my tenants, I've never had a landlord call me and ask me if I was okay. You know, because at the end of the day, we want our tenants to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really do. And we want to give them a nice place to live. And there's a war right now against, you know, landlords. And landlords are evil and terrible and all of this. And it's like, you know, we're not there. We have apartments in New York City. We're not there. 3/4 of our tenants have keys to go in and adjust the heat, you know, themselves. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, here, we want you to be comfortable. You know, it's like, it's a smaller situation. You know, obviously you can't do that in a big apartment complex, but you know, it's the same attitude, right? I want anything that I'm involved with, it starts with making sure it's a win-win for everybody. We don't want to rape and pillage the land. That's why I love this. We're bypassing Wall Street, basically.
Yeah.
That's why we're able to get the returns that we're able to get, is because we're not making these bazillion dollar salaries and Manhattan high rises and everything. It's just, and that's where it all starts. And I think that if we just keep that in mind, that we're all going to be better for this.
And we can keep more.
Keepmore.com. That's exactly right.
And yes.
That's, honestly, you mentioned Trevor, right?
Yeah.
I was on the phone with him the first day. He goes, what is the greatest thing about this real estate investing? I said, I could keep more of my money. I'm not giving it all away. I didn't make income with losses that offset it. It's crazy. You can lose money on paper instead of making money on paper and not making money on paper and not getting the money, like my $65,000 1099, right? Not even getting the money and then paying more on top of that. You can get the money and have a loss on
and,
the
and pay less in taxes.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And people just, I start talking like that and they think that we're all Bernie Madoff and this can't be true. And it is.
I'm glad that you're putting that energy into helping people, like you said, keep more and figure out about, like your book is called Hidden Investing, is like a lot of people don't know about this. And you know, there are those of us that are in the multifamily community, but there's still a lot of people that don't even know about this or don't know about all the value that can be had by investing in multifamily real estate.
I urge everybody, go look up Malcolm X and go listen to some of his speeches in the 1960s. And Malcolm X, listen to, go back and listen to some of the debates with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I mean, he tells us we should get rid of carry forward interest. He tells us he pays no taxes. He tells us. Yes. Look at Warren Buffett in a lot of his speeches and writings. He says that he pays not less tax than his secretary does or whatever. He tells us about real estate.
Yeah.
He bought Abby Holiday Realtors in Texas. If you listen and not listen to the news spin that everybody gets into, they're really telling us. It's just hidden.
It's right there in plain sight.
It's right. You really just have to take off the filters. And so it's not secret. It's not secrets. It's just hidden.
Yeah.
They don't have time to keep talking about it if nobody will listen. Right.
So what is next for Holly? What is in the future? What does the future hold for you?
Well, I'm going to get this book done. I'm going to go on the, I've got a lot of travel lined up. So we'll see how that all pans out. But as it stands right now, we're going to I've got some interviews lined up already and got a PR firm on the case. And hopefully next month and the month after that, we'll be awfully busy doing that. We're also working on a deal in North Carolina right now that we're going to close on in May or June, probably May. And we've already been able to renegotiate some things on it because of COVID. So I'm excited about that. It's cash flowing. And so that we're involved in that. And, you know, we're just going to keep doing the best we can with what we own and try to make sure that investors and tenants are all taken care of.
Yeah, exactly right. That's great advice. Well, let's jump into our monumental questions, Holly.
Okay. what we were talking about isn't very monumental.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's real monumental stuff.
Now it's massively monumental.
Massively monumental.
What does success mean to you?
Oh, I think success, if I can replicate it with other people. So the most successful thing that's happened to me in the last year is when my good friend called me. I was on spring break a year ago, actually. And he said, Holly, it's true. And I was like, what's true? You're right. I know I'm right. you saved me 25 grand and my taxes, just forget the investment. And I was like, I know. And, and that's been so exciting just to hear that stuff. So I think that's, if I can, the more I can replicate experiences like that, the more successful I'll be.
That's awesome. That's powerful. What about daily habits or morning rituals?
I have none except drink coffee. I wish I could tell you I've read the 15-minute morning or the 4-hour day or whatever, work week or whatever it is. I've read all that. And I know about meditation. And I know all that is good. And I've gone through times when I've gotten up and had the trainer at 6 a.m. and all. I've been through the whole thing. I've never been able to be consistent about it, and now I've given up.
Hey, I think that's a great point. Like, everybody has their own way of doing things, and we can all have our own path to success, and it doesn't need to be the same as everybody else. You what?
I get motivated about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's your sweet spot?
I really love to drink coffee in the morning and, you know, goof off, and so that's what I do most of the time. But you know, I'm not even consistent with that. Some days I will get up and, you know, get going. So it all depends on what I've got to do, right? But I think that I wish I could tell you that I had some religious early morning, got up at 4:30 and did yoga and whatever.
No, I love it. I love it.
I gotta be honest. Just don't know.
So what about a book or book you're currently reading? Favorite book?
Just starting it. And the first chapter is awesome. And I'm reading One Up on Wall Street.
One Up on Wall Street.
So I can't really tell you that it's going to change my life or whatever yet, but talk to me in a week or so and I'll let you know. But it was recommended to me highly by someone that I think very highly of. So
yeah, I'll have to check that out. Well, I'm reading Mastering the Cycle right now.
Oh, really?
And one recommended to me by somebody to help better understand what's going on right now.
All right. What is it called? The Cycle?
Mastering the Cycle, right? By Howard Marks.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to read that next.
Yeah. It's really interesting. He dives into like the cycles and exactly what you said, like, in the long run, it everything is growing. So it's kind of the principle of the growth, you know, goes in cycles, but it ultimately goes upward.
But here's the problem, though. What's great about real estate is that you don't have to sell the asset to make the money. That's the big thing with the cycles. So yeah. The problem with the stock market is you always pay retail, always. There's never a discount. Unless you're Warren Buffett. And then B, it always goes up and down. So when real estate is down, it can still be cash flowing. So if you
exactly,
you can still have cash flow when it's down and live off of that.
And you on the upside, if you know, you can basically pull out your capital with a refinance and still own the property.
Correct.
And still have a cash flowing asset.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Powerful.
It's very powerful.
Well, where can our Monumental listeners reach out to you, follow you, connect with you?
Keepmore.com. Email is holly@keepmore.com. Web is keepmore. And all the stuff to Hidden Investing will be, I've got hiddeninvesting.com too. So that'll all be up and going and linked together, but keepmore.com.
I love it. Guys, take Holly up on that. Keepmore.com, holly@keepmore.com, and Hidden Investing, her book coming out soon. It just, based on everything I know about Holly, I would highly recommend that book. Already, I haven't even read it. And she just brings so much value to people and really is truthful and honest and caring about everything she says. And so guys, if you enjoyed today's episode, if you enjoyed learning from Holly and our discussion, make sure to share it on social media. Let others know you're listening. Let us know you're listening. Let us know what part you got the most value from. And do not forget, help us by leaving us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. And guys, with that, have a monumental day.